What the Tech is brought to you by Future. Future is a fitness app that matches you with an elite personal trainer for one-on-one training. Sign up for Future today at future.com/Andrew and get 50% off your first month. And by Clear. Clear uses your eyes and fingerprints instead of traditional ID documents to get you through airports and stadium security faster. Get your first 2 months of Clear for free by going to clearme.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thorod. How you doing, Paul?
Andrew, where's this unfamiliar location that you're at? It looks familiar, but...
My studio. I'm in my studio today. We did a show on Friday from my office in the city. I had a crazy, crazy week. I mean, it was so hectic where we actually went to do a show on Thursday, scheduled, right. And... Con Edison decided that it was
Andrew
the perfect
left
time
me at the altar again.
I did. Once again, I left Paul at the altar. you're used, always the bridesmaid, never the bride, mm-hmm. Paul. We lost power. They said it was going to be like hours. It was literally like 15 minutes, but by the time that we got, you know, I was able to message Paul. Paul had other things going on, so we just did the show on Friday, which I thought it was fun. I thought it was a fun show last minute from my office. It kind of worked out technologically. It's amazing how you can kind of piece together the tech to make it work.
Just give me 10 minutes to fix my hair. I'll be fine.
Oh, go ahead.
What is going on with my hair? God. All right, sorry. I'm good. Sorry.
Yeah, so...
you actually waited, too. Thank you.
I did. I waited for you. I gave you common courtesy. I got it. Sometimes I need some time to do it. So we did a show last week, and I kind of wanted to go into detail some of the stuff that we discussed. Obviously, more news around the Galaxy S20. This is picking up some steam as far as tech coverage goes. I thought this was going to be a nothing year for this device. Not as far as technologically, you know, the phone, but as far as coverage goes. But this is getting a lot of coverage right now.
Right.
I think people really want there to be that mythical, amazing, the one Android phone on the market that's not Google.
Yeah.
And they kind of attempt this every year with Samsung and the Galaxy line. We discuss how, you know, the lineup, obviously we're going to have multiple phones this year. We're going to have the Galaxy S20 5G, the S25, the S20 plus 5G, the S20 Ultra 5G. So they're all going to be 5G.
Good luck keeping that all straight.
They're not going with the S11 name, and you stated last week on the show that the reason why they're doing this is they're going by the year now.
Yeah, which, you know, fine.
That's fine. It's fine. You know which one's which. It's fine. So the unveil...
I mean, they do release one every year, right? I mean, when Microsoft went to year names, I remember asking, well, does that mean there's going to be a Windows 96 and then a Windows 97? And they were like, well, you know, no, but we'll see how that goes. And I was like, well, then this doesn't make any sense.
So the pricing is what people are very upset about, and I'm surprised as to why, considering we're kind of used to this kind of price structure. The S20 is $850, the S20 Plus is $950, and the S20 Ultra is $1,200. It's pretty up there with iPhone pricing, no?
Yeah, I mean, well, the 5G Ultra, blah, blah, whatever the one is, you know, the 1300. I mean, iPhones, I suppose the starting price of an iPhone or whatever is not much less than that when you get up into the Pro Max version. But I don't know how to feel about this. Like, Samsung is neck and neck with Apple in the United States, I think, for sales. I think that was how it worked. Or maybe they were neck and neck in the worldwide in the fourth quarter or whatever it was. But overall, biggest smartphone maker in the world. Unlike Apple, they don't have three or four models. They have 15 or 50 models or whatever it is. It's crazy. So we don't really get a lot of insight into which Samsung phones sell the best, you know, or make the most money even, or however you want to measure that. I suspect it actually is not the flagships. I suspect they sell a lot of those low end, you know, J series, A series, yeah, whatever phones. And that's fine. You know, different companies have different ways to go into market. And Samsung, you know, they know the sales data. They know how things are going. It's weird. I just feel like the market's going in a different direction, you know? And
what do you
they're
think
expanding
that
the high end. And, you know, it seems a little strange to me. I mean, look, I'm interested
in... because last week we spoke about, where do you think the market's going? Because last week we were talking about, the foldable devices, I think they're kind of hokey, they're gimmicky, they're this year's notch, you know, in a way. But I think the difference is for mid-range phones, I think this is going to be a big seller.
Yeah.
Going forward. Well, once the pricing, you know, when you hit that mid-range pricing, which will eventually happen.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah. Yep. I don't know. So... yeah, I was just, you know, I had just written something about Google's phones. And if you look at the, if you listen to or read the transcript of their post earnings conference call, they don't come out and say it, but they really were kind of saying between the lines, like, look, the Pixel 4 is not selling very well. Pixel 3 did not sell very well. The Pixel 3a actually sold pretty well. And that was the cheap one. You know, and that's relative to their other phones. You know, Pixel is like the surface of the phone world. It's, you know, it, the platform maker makes it, nobody buys these things, you know.
But why is it? I find that interesting, because in the phone world, however, it's a little bit different, because the flagships are what drives the market in the sense of innovation, right? And notoriety. For Apple, obviously, it's the iPhone, and the iPhone 11 Pro would be their flagship, and every, you know, people still buy this phone, even though it's very expensive for
Google, but
however.
Apple does something. I think what Apple does is very smart in the phone market, because they have this kind of, well, they have two, but they have these high-end phones with the triple cameras, and they're made out of this special unicorn aluminum or whatever it is. And, you know, they're really cool. And people go into the store and they're like, oh, that's like $1,250. They're like, yeah, but we have this other thing over here. It's $800 and it's basically the same thing. And they sell, that's what they sell the most of. And that's really, really smart. I don't know how it works with Samsung, because Samsung, like I said, they have, what do they have, 50 model? I mean, they have, it's hard to say. So we don't really know. I suspect what they're doing is selling a medium number of a lot of different phones. I bet they don't have one phone that outsells everything else, like Apple kind of does. So it's just a different way to go to market. It's a little harder to understand how it works, but, the reason I mentioned Google was that there are obviously some problems when you hit the middle of the low end of the market with, you know, performance and maybe reliability and whatever it is. And on the Google side, like, they delivered a phone that I think came in an awesome, like, polycarbonate body that I thought was really cool. Great camera system. That's obviously key these days.
Remarkable. You know, like probably the best.
Yeah. Well, at the time. I mean, now with the new generation of phones, it's kind of hard to say, but, you know, Apple, Apple and Huawei and Google all have excellent camera systems, pluses and minuses, you know, whatever they are. So I'm really curious. I don't know if Samsung's new flagships act as a sort of a halo product to get people into stores, and then maybe they go, you know, like, are there people really getting excited about an S20 and then they go to the Verizon store and they buy like a J series phone for $99?
No, I mean, it doesn't work.
Probably
like that.
Not, right?
Yeah. Maybe the opposite, right? You walk in there for a J-series phone, you get upsold to an S20.
Well, that's the other way that phones are kind of different from other products. Not that you can't finance other products, but because a phone purchase is always tied to a subscription that you're paying every month anyway, right? So if you walked in and you were like, look, I'm going to pay for this thing outright, they'd be like, great. You're still going to spend $30 or $50 or $60 a month or whatever it is on the carrier. So a lot of people, it's like, well, I'm paying that anyway. So let's make it $35 or $45 or $70, and then I don't have to pay the $500 or $1,000 whatever the phone costs.
Yeah.
So that makes it a little bit of a different market, right? Than, say, like a computer market. You buy the computer. You're not typically paying a subscription on top of the computer. So I don't know. I'm still confused by how expensive things are. You know, Google has no business selling phones that cost $1,000. Samsung as the market leader, I mean, I guess you could make the argument, you know, that's good. Is this going to be their best seller in 2019? I don't know.
But But you know what's interesting? So just walking, you know, I live in New York. So the gauge is a little bit skewed here, right? With how people use devices and everything. I'm in a major city. Same thing with San Francisco or Chicago or any major city. Boston, it's going to be skewed. I don't see too many Android phones in the wild. But when I do, it's a mid-range device.
Interesting.
I'm not talking about the guy that has the Note 10 that I work with. I'm not talking about, you know, the one person that's an Android fan. I'm talking about, you know, they're either a couple years old or they're mid-range devices that are out in the wild that I see that are Android. And most of the time, these are just people that are buying a smartphone. They're not going to purchase, you know, the S20 for the camera. So the overall, you're absolutely right. The mid-range Android devices are saturating the market. That is who uses a phone. But do see someone with a flagship phone, I would honestly, 8 times out of 10, it's an iPhone. I mean, that's just...
I see a lot of iPhone. We live in the United States. I mean, the iPhone is the best-selling phone in the United States. I was at a bar on, doesn't matter what night, Friday, let's say it was Friday night, whatever. And it's interesting. I just happened to notice the woman next to me had what was clearly a Note 10, which, you know, they distinctive, you know, Samsung icons, the middle, you know, the camera hole in the middle and yada, yada. It was right next to me. I could just see it. And then I was talking to my wife, who was on my other side. We were on the corner, and the guy who was sitting next to her also had a Samsung Note 10. And I was like, "How?" I actually pointed it out to her. I was
were
like,
"Were they together?"
No, they were on. There were two different couples. It was just maybe on opposite sides of us. Well, it was just a weird thing. I pointed it out to my wife, who couldn't care less, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like, "This is the kind of thing I notice." You're right. I mean, typically, if I were to look around the room, like you probably do when you sit at a bar or whatever, go out in the world.
Always,
you look at what people are doing and what phones they have and everything. And in the United States, you see a lot of iPhones. But we have like a microclimate for phones here. I mean, it's different in Europe. It's different in Asia. It's, you know, different in other places.
Yeah, you go like in Europe. When I was in Europe, it was fascinating to see how they use technology. I was blown away. I actually applaud. When I was in Ireland, I was in Dublin. I went to Belfast. I went to Northern Ireland in Belfast, but I was staying in a small town on the border called Monaghan, and I was visiting a friend over there. And I was just observing how people use technology in different countries. I have to tell you, and I spoke about this on the show, you know, something you didn't see that much, okay? Something that was not a common thing. You go to a New York City bar, right? Anytime. Doesn't matter if it's midday. You go to... Everybody has their phone in their hand, and they're talking to you like this.
I know.
The whole time.
Yeah.
When I was in Ireland, and these were all young guys, right? It was like a Friday. Yep. It was a Friday night or Saturday night. I was at a busy bar, the local bar. Like, everybody was there. Nobody had their phones out. And when they did, they saw either it was to let somebody know where they are or to let somebody know that they're coming home. That was it, and the phones were in the pocket. That was it.
You know, but
I was blown away by it.
They also probably stopped on the way to the bar at like a tobacco and topped up their mobiles.
Yeah. You
know, there are these weird cultural, you know, kind of differences that are, you know, that make travel fun, I guess. But I see that out in the world all the time in the United States. And it saddens me. In fact, in that same bar, maybe that same night, we go to the same place every weekend, but I will often point at couples sitting around the bar. And they're both just sitting there next to each other looking at their own phones. And it's like, oh, geez, what is happening? Like, seriously, like there was one couple last weekend, actually same place, you know, they were at the far end of the bar and I pointed them out to my wife and I was like, I don't think, are those two together? And we literally kind of watched them the entire night. They never interacted once. They got some food. They had some drinks. The bill came
and they
the woman paid. And then they looked at each other for the first time and then they left together. And I was like, what the hell was that?
Okay. There's two very strange scenarios. One, the couple that doesn't talk, right? They're out. Yes. They don't talk. They just sit there and they eat silent. The other one.
Yeah. Do you want to go not talk to each other, but somewhere that's not our house? Yeah. Why not?
Do you and Steph sit next to each other if it's only you two?
In a restaurant.
In a restaurant. Do you guys sit next to each other or across from each other? Okay. Yeah. Okay, you're normal. Bar,
we always try to get like a corner seat.
At a bar.
If you think about it, like a, you know, if you're sitting next to each other, you're next to each other. It's whatever. But when you're in a corner, you can kind of gives you that
angle.
You're still at a bar, but you can also face that person. Yeah.
The only time Jess and I sit next to each other, we're sitting at a bar. I sat down. We went to one of our places. I know this has become we've gone off topic, and I promise I'm going to get back. But it's just human nature, right? How people interact with each other. Fascinating. They're sitting at a table. Mm-hmm. It's a bench and then two other seats. So it's actually like four people could sit, but one is a bench seat on the other side. They're sitting at the bench seat next to each other.
Yeah, no, I don't like when I see people.
And I'm like,
that.
Ugh. It made me, I was telling Jess, I'm like, I want to get up there. I view that I want to go and tell them that this is weird.
You know what? It's immature, is what it is. It tells me that these people have an immature relationship, meaning they're not particularly sophisticated about where they are in life.
Thank you.
And they might even be worried that other people will see the person they're with and be interested in them. And so they're overly emphasizing how together they are.
Paul, you a-hole New England elitist. Judging people.
Listen, there's only two reasons to go to a bar, Andrew.
Yeah.
One of those reasons is to judge people.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
So I don't know what you're getting at, but I just established I was at a bar.
I agree with you. I mean, you
got
to get back to this. You are right. The Pixel has failed for Google.
It's really fascinating to me. The parallels between Microsoft and Google in that they both made these platforms, Windows and Android. At one time, they partnered to make other devices that made by other, you know, by actual hardware makers better. In Microsoft's case, with the Signature PC, remember, and in Google's case with Nexus. And then they felt like that wasn't quite working out, and they both decided to get into the business of making their own hardware. So now they're designing it in-house. And I realize they don't actually physically make the thing, but they're, you know, they're for all intents and purposes, from A to Z, they're making it. You know, they're responsible for the creation of that thing. And now what that means is they're competing with their partners, because obviously they partner with other companies to make their own phones. And neither one of them is doing very well. You know, they both had like serious reliability issues over time. They both don't have market leading features like all the time. Like, it's weird. They both have designs that I happen to like, and I think they both have like these groups of enthusiasts who really like the products, but they never seem to do very well out in the market. Like, they're basically boutique hardware makers. They're never in the top 5 or 10 or whatever it is of hardware makers for their respective platforms. They never rate. Like, they're just never there. Yeah. And I can't explain it. I can't explain. Like, as an enthusiast, I naturally like these kinds of things. I like, if I'm going to use Android, or if you're going to use Android, I recommend trying to get that pure Android thing, not some tortured change thing from some other company. And same thing on Windows. Like, you want the pure, you know, experience. But I still can't recommend them. You know, it's such a weird position to be in. Both of those things, Pixel phones and Surface PCs, should be no-brainers. They should be no-brainers. I should be able to, without any caveat or a worry, recommend them to anybody. And it's weird that I can't.
Well, here's
it's just a strange position to be in.
And look at what Microsoft is. I'm going to lose my voice by the end of the show. I'm so sorry, guys. Yeah. I don't know what's happening.
I'm so excited.
I'm starting to feel it. I don't know what happened.
You got the coronavirus.
I got that. Oh, God. You know, it's quite possible at this point. I'm not... my wife had swine flu a couple of years ago when that was a thing. Right. So when, you know, looking at this, you got to say, well, look at what Microsoft is doing right now with the phones, right? They're not releasing a normal phone. They're releasing a very niche, unique concept that I don't know. It doesn't matter if it does great or if it fails. It's still, the concept was that they put out a very unique idea, and they're taking a risk with this thing. They could have played it safe by release the, you know, let's call it the Surface phone, running Android that looks like it's not running Android. We've all, and I still think this is the direction they're going to go in, and they're going to have that phone. It's going to happen. But
yeah,
they've taken a whole different leap into essentially a skinned Android phone, right?
Right, right. I mean, you know, look, I mean, I had heard that they were making a phone about a year ago, and it was, I didn't hear it was dual screen and folding and all that stuff, but the justification I got from, you know, and this different sources kind of feeding different parts of the story to me was basically like, look, because we don't have this giant infrastructure to worry about like we did when we owned Nokia, factories, workers with their pensions and salaries and all that stuff, you know, they're basically just outsourcing this, and it's kind of a low risk thing. And it can, and you know, as someone from Microsoft had kind of asked me rhetorically, like, what if Microsoft could have a small phone business that was profitable? Like, what, you know, what's the big deal? Like, we're not going to be with the top five. It doesn't matter, but we have this profitable business. It makes sense for us to do this because we have enterprise customers who want to have certain things and blah, 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 whatever it is. And yeah, you know, that's fine. I mean, that's absolutely fine. But, you know, we were just talking about like Google, for example, in the phone market. Like, I don't feel like what they've done has been profitable at all. You know, they spent a lot of money to basically buy all of HTC or whatever, you know, the part of HTC that matters, to kind of build up this phone business. You know, they've obviously spent a lot on R&D and designs and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I feel like it just hasn't panned out, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I think the story of Android is going to be the saturation more than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's good. That's a real, you're going to have the top end. The Android market looks more like the PC market than the iPhone does, if you really think about it.
Yeah. No. And by the tons way, of OEMs, makes sense.
I mean, all look different, all feel different. Yep. Some are a better experience than others. They're all lacking something.
Yeah. Apple doesn't make a piece of shit iPhone, just like they don't make a piece of shit Mac.
Yeah.
And if you look at the volume sales in the Android phone market and in the PC market, I'm sure by unit, they are pieces of shit. You know, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't awesome designs, premium devices, really desirable hardware on both sides, and that some of those do pretty well, and that a lot of the profits when they're available come from those types of machines. But yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, Android competes with iPhone, obviously, and the Mac competes with Windows, sort of. In some ways, they're completely different, regardless, you know, from each other.
Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting. Before we continue, I want to remind everybody, if you enjoy the show, if you enjoy Paul and I doing this, you could join our Patreon, fund us $1 a show, $2 a show, $5 a show, whatever you want to fund us. I call it our, we were talking about the bar, that's our beer money. You know, that's we go out, we have a couple drinks.
Our judging money.
We sit at the bar and judge people with this. If you go to patreon.com/whatthetech, you get access to our bonus shows that we record after each What the Tech that we do. We've been way more committed us to recording these bonus shows as far as doing it weekly. And you guys are signed up, which I absolutely love. Also, for Therat Premium, go to therat.com, sign up for Therat Premium. One of the topics that we were talking about, and that's the Pixel 4, and if the Google Pixel failed, that's a Therat Premium article, and they have, you know, the articles, they're thought engaging. You know, it's not a short little thing that you do. You do these Therat Premium articles, and they're very, you know, sometimes I go on the site and I see it, and I'm like, wow, you know what, that one's a really good one. And I go to message you, and I totally forget to message you and tell you that I really enjoyed it. So
yeah, no, I'm sure. It's the thought that counts, Andrew.
It's the thought that counts. So you go to Therat.com, sign up for Therat Premium there. So I want to kind of stick to a topic that I discussed with you a while ago. We were talking about, do you remember we were talking about email and what clients people are using?
Yeah.
And you told me not to use Outlook.
Outlook. Like 2019 or whatever. Like
Outlook. You told me not to use it. So on my Mac, I've been using Apple Mail.
Oh, I mean, by the way, you're on a Mac. I mean, Outlook on a Mac is completely different.
Okay.
So actually, you could look at that. I meant the one on Windows. The one on Windows is a nightmare.
On the Mac, and I've been using it more and more, and I'm very close to making it my main email client at this point.
Which one is
Apple Outlook. Mail. Outlook. Okay. Outlook. No. To leave Apple Mail and go to Outlook. For whatever reason, this is something that's not really being discussed. On the latest version of Mac OS, the mail client has really taken a back seat. Like, it's not good. It's very buggy. It has a UI issue where on the side you can see your mailboxes. It disappears. It just goes gray. So you have to shut down the application and start again. Also, when you load it up, it takes – and I've done this on three different devices, so I know it's not my device. It peaks the CPU usage for like a good like minute. It's kind of – and I know I'm going to get an email saying, well, mine doesn't do this. It's fine. Yours doesn't have to do it. But I have a much larger email box than most people. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I have like 20 email accounts that I never had issues with before, and now I have – tremendous problems with this client.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they did something, and it's not a good something. So I'm looking to kind of jump ship and go to Outlook exclusively. Dude, it's great on the Mac. It's really good on the Mac.
Yeah, I don't use a Mac, so I can't speak. I just know it's different. So it's a completely different code base. It's a much newer app. It doesn't have all the legacy nonsense built into it like Outlook does on Windows. So I'm sure it's much better.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to jump ship and commit to it full time.
I use Outlook on mobile for whatever that's worth. I think Outlook mobile is fantastic.
More than on your iPhone too?
Yeah. Yep.
You do. And you use it over Apple Mail.
Mm-hmm.
Any reason why?
I just prefer the way it works. I mean, it's just, you know, so back in the day, like I used to really, really like Inbox, the Google Inbox app. And then I would use Google Calendar, like on mobile. And it was just a friendly front end to Gmail. It could aggregate accounts and all that kind of stuff. And so the thing about Outlook I like is it has the same simple interface. You can configure how the swipes work. Like I do right swipe to archive, left swipe to delete. So it's really good for triaging email. It has calendar built in. So the two main views are email and calendar. So it's like one app, one icon. It just works great. It just works the way I want. It's what I want. It's just really nice. I don't, as a Windows user, I don't have a version of that on Windows, and that kind of bugs me. So, unfortunately, on Windows, I'm stuck with using the Gmail web interface now. Although I use a browser plugin or extension or whatever to make it simpler and more like Inbox used to be, because even default Gmail is kind of big and heavy, but. Yeah, I mean, that was something, you know, that's something I've struggled with the email thing a lot. And over the past year with Inbox going away and trying to figure that out, I never
got behind Inbox. It didn't do it.
Yeah, I loved Inbox. I'd give anything to have that back. But the way it is now is pretty close. So, I mean, I sort of realized, like, I don't know, you just said something about having, what did you say? How many accounts? You have a lot of accounts.
Right now. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
One. Hold on. Sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I mean, dude, 12, 13, crazy. 14, 15, 16, 17 email accounts.
I don't, I only have, I have two main accounts and really only one of them is like the daily use thing. So my Throt.com account, which is the Gmail thing, is the thing I need to be on top of every day, all day. So that's the thing I use on the computer. The big break for me was like over the past year, I was like, you know what? I don't really have to access those other accounts on the computer. It doesn't matter. Like if I get email to my old Hotmail account, which is Outlook.com now, or my secondary Gmail accounts, don't need to see those the second they come in. They're never important. And so I just, those go aggregate through Outlook Mobile on the phone, whatever phone I'm using. And, you know, when I'm on the phone, I can check and I, you know, swipe, and they're gone and they're never important. I don't have to worry about it. So that kind of works for me, but
do you keep your inbox clean?
I try to. So the reality is I never catch up. And what I'll do is at the beginning of every month, and then I don't always do this exactly right, but somewhere in the middle of the month, I'll go back and I just archive email that's more than 2 weeks old because I'm just never going to get to it. So if I didn't reply it, rather than have the weight of those things, you know, there bothering me because I'm not going to reply. Like if I haven't replied in 2 weeks, it's not happening. So
yeah, I'm really meticulous with my inbox. I have two emails right now that I need to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I just found something in my spam folder that should not be in there. It's a very important email. Important email that should not be in there. That's more of a problem that I've noticed recently, that I'm getting a lot of false positives into my spam folder. So I got to do a better job at kind of looking at that. But
you shouldn't have to. That's the problem is this is like I was just tweeting this. Like, this is the second day in a row I've gotten a fake email from Apple support telling that my account's been frozen.
Constantly.
You know, I don't understand how that gets through. Even I could write an email app that could figure out that the sender and the thing it's supposedly coming from are not the same. Thus, it is spam. Like, to me, this is the easiest problem to solve in the world. And yet this happens all the time. And I that is very upsetting. Yeah. And then the problem you just described is in some ways more upsetting because you don't know that's there.
I have 5,400. Unless
you look. And you should never have to look at that. You should never have to look.
I have 5,800 emails in my junk folder right now. And I went through this a month ago.
Okay.
Like and it's always like, congratulations.
Now you're making me curious.
Here's one thing. Create mouth-watering interactive video that explodes traffic.
Mouth-watering.
That's one email that I just got. It's a lot of Russian. I get a lot of Russian in my inbox. And then, like, every now and then, it's like a CVS confirmation order. I'm like, what the hell's going on here?
I get, you know, I'm looking at, I have an email from Mary Jo Foley in my spam folder. This message seems dangerous, it says.
No.
That's really funny.
Yeah, that's funny.
I
don't know. I find that interesting, but I'm going to try, I'm going to Outlook 100%. Also, Outlook on iPad OS got a big update, right?
Yes.
Or multitasking.
This is I'm so focused on the spam now. I'm freaking out. And there you go. There's Outlook. We're just talking about Outlook Mobile. Do I use it? I don't really use it on the iPad, but that's just because I've kind of made the decision to use iPad for, you know, reading and watching videos for the most part, right? I mean, but that's just kind of my goofy weirdness. But yeah, I mean, I listen. You if you haven't looked at Outlook on, you know, your phone or whatever, I mean, if you use an iPad, you should look at that again because it is it's just such a great app.
Yeah, I'm gonna try it. I wanted to talk to you about the Super Bowl. This is something I was very excited to talk to you about. How did you view the Super Bowl this year?
So it's funny you ask because it was like 6 o'clock. And I said to Stephanie, my wife, I was like, we should probably figure out how we're going to watch the Super Bowl because we don't have TV, you know?
Okay.
So the first thing I did was we're using a Fire TV stick now for, you know, for TV or whatever.
So that's become your thing, right? No more Roku. It's the Fire TV stick.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
I got to show you some cool stuff with that thing, with that device.
Okay. So I figured, you know, they have that top carousel. One of those things is going to be about the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was. And actually, there were four or five options. You could get like the, I think it was like the Fox Sports app or something. Or the
Fox Sports, Fox Now.
Yeah, whatever they were. And NFL, I chose the NFL version.
Yeah,
so
which, by like, the way, they were all Fox.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's probably I assumed it was just the feed from the Super Bowl, right?
So did you watch the 4K feed?
Well, I ended up not watching. I did something different. What I was going to say was I went to I installed the NFL app. I ran it. It came up. It was clearly some kind of a pregame thing. It was like, what's his face? I just forgot his first name. Peyton Manning talking to somebody. And I'm like, all right, this looks like it's, you know, this looks like it's right. But then it did what was clearly like a house ad kind of a thing. Like instead of seeing the ad that was coming out to the TV audience, it was like an app ad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no, I don't want that. So I was like, oh, screw it. I just used a secondary Google account to create, to start up YouTube TV.
Okay. And get the
free.
Yeah.
And I used that. And then I canceled the account after the game.
Okay,
and
so
I feel
surprised.
My conscience is clear on this because, again, I could have watched it for free in a variety of ways. But that's how we watched it. So we just used YouTube. I just wanted to make sure we saw the commercials, which, you know, in retrospect, maybe I shouldn't have worried so much because most of them were pretty terrible. But
so I watched on the Fox Sports app because it was 4K.
Okay.
So it wasn't really 4K. It was upscale 1080p 4K, but on the Fire TV, it was HDR 10.
Oh, nice.
So you had upscale 1080p HDR 10 upscale to 4K.
Yeah.
Dude, it looked remarkable.
Did it?
Did it make the game better?
Because that was a terrible game.
Okay. It really...
Until the end.
I'm going to tell you, you know, with movies, I understand when people don't see the difference, right? Like between 4K and 1080p. I get how they don't. Depending on the proximity from the screen, how far away you are, how your color balance is set up. Is it an HDR? Is it not an HDR? Well,
you know what, though? I just watched some 1080p video on my TV, which is a 4K TV. And you get this, I don't know what, you probably know the right term for this. Imagine it's like a dark scene in a movie. Mm-hmm. And there's a big area that's mostly black, and maybe it turns into trees.
And then you
see that kind of, you know, it's pixel, you know what I mean? I think you see that a lot more at lower resolution streaming, whereas
absolutely.
4K, it would kind of clean that up.
Yeah, because you also have to remember the 4K feed is at a higher, technically it's a higher bit rate, even though it's not because of the encoding it's doing. So if it's H.265 and they're talking about encoding, this just told me I just went below my threshold for bit rate for the show. Google's yelling at me. So either way, so but I put this thing on my TV in the bedroom. So I actually have multiple settings for color and everything on my TV. I'm really meticulous with this. So I have a sports setting that I watch sports with this kind of color balance. Like I like it a little bit colder with the color balance when I watch a sports compared to watching film, you know, or movie. I like it a little bit warmer. So I put it on the normal setting, and it looked remarkable. And then I put it, like, I tweaked the color balance and everything. My God, Paul, it was so noticeable where, and this is my bedroom, so I'm not, like, having people over, but my wife came in the room. She goes, wow, that's clear. For the first time ever, she goes, wow, did you... Like, why does it look so different?
Right.
Because we were watching downstairs on the 1080p stream downstairs.
Oh, okay.
I go, well, it's upscale 4K. He goes, Andrew, I always tell you, like, I don't notice it. My God, this is noticeable. Right. It looked so good. And by the way, I know it's not 4K. It was 1080p upscaled. But my God, whatever they did, it looked so good. And I go, you know what? This is exciting because I got in and my wife got into the game.
Yeah.
Because of how good it looked. Like, it was daunting to her how clear it was. And and I got to tell you, Fox did a great job. They had a couple of hiccups. And I know Brad was watching the 4K stream also because we were talking because it had a hiccup at one point. But, my God, if they don't do this for the entirety of next season, this is going to be a big push for Fox, I know, with their content. Because I have a friend at WWE, and they told me that they're experimenting with 4K for the Fox app. If you're watching WWE on the Fox app, you're going to get 4K streaming or 1080p upscaled, right? This is really for sports. This is an advantage to have when you talk about streaming over cable. Because you got to remember, the over-the-air feed is 720p for Fox.
Right, right.
So going from watching 720p, Super Bowl in 720p, and then going and watching it in upscale 4K, God, it is night and day.
Nice.
I really was impressed by what they did. Somebody also sent me the chart for the cameras, like how many cameras. They have like 69 cameras they're using for the Super Bowl.
Sure.
It's unbelievable how they do this. But I'm surprised you didn't watch it in 4K. I think you would have been very impressed.
I've been saying for years, like, I, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. Is like, as a Patriots fan, the Super Bowl has been kind of tough because it's so stressful to watch. And I like football. I just want to kind of enjoy football, you know. And it's like, I kind of wish the Patriots would not be in it so I could just, like, enjoy the game, you know. Yeah. And then
he didn't. And he didn't enjoy it?
Well, I found myself not caring much about it. Like, you know, my wife had asked at one point, like, you know, who do you want to win or whatever? I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah. I watched it. The commercials were in 4K also, which I found interesting that they that was part of it. The halftime show was great. I enjoyed watching the Super Bowl this year because I didn't have I like the Niners, so it didn't matter, but I'm not a huge Niners fan.
I thought both those teams were terrible.
Did you? Like, I thought it was a decent game.
Oh, they were terrible.
I did not hit on any boxes. I lost so much money this year.
The end of the game was it's you know, obviously Kansas City kind of turned it around in the the second half of the last quarter, whatever that was. That was great. You know, the Super Bowl, I want to be clear, this had nothing to do with the Patriots not being there. The Patriots are terrible in the Super Bowl, almost always, you know, with the one exception being that kind of come from behind thing in Atlanta. But
even when they win?
Yeah, no, they're terrible. It's terrible. No, the Super Bowl is usually a terrible game. And there's a real, you know, the problem with football is it's one game playoffs, one game championship, right? So anything could happen, and the best team doesn't always win. Best team probably usually doesn't win. I mean, on paper, both the 49ers and the Chiefs were fantastic teams. And then you watch them play, and you're like, my God. I had said to my wife, as the game started, I said, San Francisco quarterback, who I will always refer to as Jimmy Garoppolo. I was like, that is the guy who should be the Patriots quarterback.
Yeah.
And then the games unfolded, and I was like, thank God that guy is not the Patriots quarterback. He was terrible. So, I mean, he was terrible.
I'm trying to find what point they fall apart for the Patriots. Because what year was the last, how many years did they do over the last 10 years in the Super Bowl?
Oh, I don't know, 10 years. I mean, they've been in the Super Bowl every 3 years and have won every 4 years or something like that over 20 years or whatever
it is. It's something crazy.
I think they were in the past four Super Bowls.
Yeah.
I think. Something like that.
Well, viewership has been eroding since 2015 when it hit 114 million viewers. Nielsen said that the viewership rebounded slightly from 98.5 million in 2019 to 99.9 million. So 100 million people watched the Super Bowl with its peak viewership at 103 million during the halftime show. I'm trying to find statistics as to how many people watched streaming.
Yeah. I mean, those numbers are only going to explode over time. I mean, I'm sure they're probably still fairly small. I mean, compared to, you know, cable TV viewership.
Well, last year was 2.6 million.
How many?
2.6 million last year.
Oh, that's even
last year.
That's even lower than I thought.
Yeah.
All right, but
here we go. Fox is claiming 3.4 million people watched it streaming.
3.4.
Okay. Yeah. It's not a lot.
No, it's not. Yeah.
Not a lot. Interesting though. Very interesting. I'm surprised you didn't see it in 4K, but I just want to tell people it was very impressive.
I honestly got to tell you, I took a shower at one point in this game where I was like, I'm going to go take a shower. I completely ambivalence, you know? I don't know. It's weird. I feel weird about stuff like this. Like, I don't watch as much basketball as I used to. I feel weird about that. I don't watch as much football as I used to, and I kind of feel weird about that. I watch baseball has been the one that has really stuck for us for some reason.
That's your thing.
Yeah, and it's weird because growing up, I was much more of a basketball fan, especially, and then I would say a football fan second. And it's kind of reversed, you know, over time, and I can't explain why. I don't know. Don't you feel like the NFL's not going to be around in 10 years? I mean, don't you feel like it's living on borrowed time as it is?
Well, the XFL is debuting back. It starts up again this weekend.
I don't see where the XFL solves the problem. Frankly, in fact, it might exacerbate the problem.
The XFL is starting. I think that's wild that they made a comeback. I am going to go to a couple XFL games this year.
That's incredible.
I'm the New York Guardians.
Sure.
They got a $45 million a year TV deal, so they're going to make some money. They're not going to fall apart like that, the AAF. But I do find it interesting the XFL is back. You know? It's crazy.
You know, I don't know what to say to that. What you just reminded me of was I saw, you've heard of Bachman Turner Overdrive?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a band from the 70s. So at some point in the mid to late 80s, they opened for Van Halen, and the guy from the band said, BTO is back. And I'm like, I don't think they are. I don't think they are.
Well, and a big song.
I sort of feel like
what?
That way about the XFL.
Taking care of business, right? That was their big song?
That's right. There's a good Simpsons joke about BTO where they play that song, and then Homer's like, play Taking Care of Business. And he's like, we just played that song. He's like, play it. And then they just play it again. Because really, they only have two songs. Or three songs, or whatever it is. But
all right, Paul. One more thing here.
Yes.
I had a question for you. I'm trying to find it now.
Mm-hmm.
Do I not have it? Oh, what do you think of Google's? Did you see that Google printing service that they announced?
Yeah.
What is that exactly?
This is something they're considering or experimenting with, and it's basically, I think, what do you pay, like $8 a month or something? And they pick some number of photos from your photos taken that month, and they print them and send them to you. Google Play Music is going to look at the music you listen to, and then they're going to make a playlist out of your favorite songs, and they're going to send it to you on an album. It's like, it just seems kind of strange. I will say, you know, look, as an older gentleman, I mean, I appreciate the desire, especially among younger people, for the old days, you know, when things were simpler, like books came on paper, photos came on paper, you know, music came in some kind of a physical contraption that you needed a special device to play or whatever. I appreciate that, but I don't think, I don't know, printing photos and hanging them on the wall, I mean, or whatever, I don't, do people do this?
I guess so.
Lot. I mean, you might have a couple of family photos or something.
I do. Like in my office, I got a bunch of photos of the kids and everything, you know?
Yeah, I know. But do you have enough of them that you're like, I need to spend $1,000 on a high quality printer so I can get this done or whatever? Like,
no,
I don't have
enough.
Right? I mean,
I don't have enough
of
that.
It just seems like they ship has sailed. Like even in the early days of like the digital media stuff, like when Apple was kind of coming up, like people used to make like photo books. Remember? Like that was one of the big things you could do with like iPhoto. And then there were services like online, you know, obviously Snapfish and so forth. And I make a photo book for my mother every year, you know, because, you know, she doesn't live here and she wants to see the kids and everything. And she's old and she's not going to, even though she has probably a 70-inch TV that would be better for her. This is the way she, you know, she's old.
Yeah.
But I just feel like this stuff is antiquated. I don't know.
It is a little bit. All right, Paul. Let's wrap it up. We're going to do a bonus show for a couple minutes after this. So if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to do What the Talk following this show. If you listen to the podcast or watching the podcast, go to patreon.com/whatthetech and fund us there and join and get access. You know, we do like 20 minutes of bonus content each week, and it's a lot of fun. It's stuff that we normally don't talk about. Today was a little bit of a looser show, but next week, I have a lot more for next week. I'm doing kind of research on something I'm going to bring up next week.
Okay.
I thought I'd be ready for it this week, but I didn't have enough time, but I want to talk about it next week. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. For all things me, go to my Twitter @AndrewZarian. Follow me on Twitter. You can follow Paul also @therot.com, @therot on Twitter, and we'll see you all next time. Take care. Bye-bye.